Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. On a day when President Trump might pardon you or commute your sentence for your nonviolent drug offense, if you know Kim Kardashian, or maybe if you're Michael Flynn, Michael Cohen, or Paul Manafort, we'll see. But also on a day when Speaker of the House Paul Ryan is actually calling BS on Trump's claim that the FBI was politically out to get Trump in 2016 by launching the Russia investigation in the first place.
I think Chairman Gowdy's initial assessment is accurate. But we have some more digging to do. But I have seen no evidence to the contrary of the initial assessment that Chairman Gowdy has made. But I want to make sure that we run every lead down and make sure we get final answers to these questions.
Of course, Ryan is leaving Congress after this year, so his clout is way down. But he has refused to break with the president previously, almost no matter what kinds of fantastical evidence-free claims Trump has cooked up. Now Ryan spoke up, even if somewhat equivocally there. He did say unequivocally that he supported the his colleague, Congressman Gowdy, another Republican, in saying that the Russia investigation was launched legitimately, which hasn't stopped Trump lawyer Rudy Giuliani from reinforcing yet another conspiracy narrative, maybe the most outrageous yet.
A group of 13 highly partisan Democrats that make up the Mueller team, excluding him, are trying very, very hard to frame him, to get him in trouble when he hasn't done anything wrong.
Frame him. He said frame him. There's the former U.S. attorney and law and order mayor of New York actually saying, with no evidence, that everyone on the Mueller team, except Mueller, is trying to frame the president. Think about it for a minute. Framing someone generally means a crime has been committed and someone is trying to concoct phony evidence that blames an innocent person for the crime, right? The Merriam-Webster Dictionary defines framing, I looked it up this morning, as to contrive the evidence against an innocent person so that a verdict of guilty is assured. So Giuliani, a former U.S. attorney who presumably was able to do his job honestly despite also being a partisan Republican, Giuliani is saying without evidence that Mueller's final report on Trump might accuse him of something based on made-up facts to frame him. As we see from the polls, it doesn't matter if the claim is based on nothing. A third of the country will believe it. So we'll see if Giuliani has any comment on the actual new charges that Mueller has actually brought against Paul Manafort this week for witness tampering. Now, that's contriving evidence, and it's a serious felony if the allegations are true, if Manafort is guilty as newly charged. Now, this is also a day on which House Republicans might actually be trying to do something for the young immigrants in the DACA program, and a day on which Politico reports that the president might try to reorganize the federal government. That sounds big, including the consolidation of welfare programs under one roof and renaming the Department of Health and Human Services, maybe putting the word welfare in the title. Now, since welfare is a word that carries a stigma more than health or human services, it could be intended to damage political support for programs like food stamps, Social Security, and Medicare. Social Security and Medicare are already within HHS. And with all that as backdrop, we welcome Brooklyn and Queens Congressman Hakeem Jeffries, whose sprawling district runs from downtown Brooklyn out to Ozone Park and down to Coney Island. Relevant to much of what we'll talk about, he's a member of the House Judiciary Committee. Congressman Jeffries, welcome back to WNYC.
Good morning, Brian. Great to be with you.
I see that you and the other Democrats on the House Judiciary Committee sent a letter yesterday to White House counsel Don McGahn about pardons. Can you tell us what you wrote?
Well, I think, one, there's a concern that the process that has been undertaken by Donald Trump has differed from that of every previous administration, Democrats and Republicans, in that there is no process. If a celebrity introduces a case to the president, he pays attention, makes some decisions. If the conservative right-wing media amplifies the particular plight of a given set of individuals, Joe Arpaio, Scooter Libby, Dinesh D'Souza, for instance, the president is making decisions about the issuance of a presidential pardon. And I think there's a growing concern amongst the American people that we are endeavoring to channel as House Judiciary Committee Democrats as to how we move forward with a situation that the administration of justice is even-handed. Because after all, though the constitutional power to pardon vests within the presidency, it is part of the overall fabric of our judicial system in terms of his ability to exonerate or issue commutations, and we think that that must proceed in an even-handed fashion.
So I don't think anyone really believes Trump would pardon himself, even though he's tweeting that he has the right to. Even Giuliani says Trump would be impeached if he tried to do that. The bigger issue, it seems to me, is that he may already be trying to obstruct justice by hinting publicly through the pardons that he's making that you just listed, and by talking about that, that he might pardon Michael Flynn, Michael Cohen, or Paul Manafort if they don't share evidence with law enforcement about Trump himself. Did you ask Don McGahn about that in your letter?
Absolutely, and there's growing suspicion and concern that the use, or some might say abuse, of the presidential pardon system relates to the notion that he could be telegraphing to the individuals that you just mentioned, Brian, and all of the president's men wrapped up in what appears to have been a massive conspiracy involving Russian spies to undermine the 2016 election with the possible assistance of several members of the Trump campaign and associates, in order to make clear that if you don't cooperate with the special counsel, if you refuse to give him information, even if you go down the road of a trial and are convicted, at the end of the day, Trump has that capacity to issue a pardon. This could be, as we've laid out, part of an obstruction of justice effort to undermine the outcome of the Mueller investigation, and that's quite unfortunate because the American people just need to know what happened. And Bob Mueller, at the moment, is the vehicle to provide that information.
It's a form, potentially, of witness tampering, the same thing Paul Manafort was charged with this week by Mueller, and we'll get into that. But in theory, and I don't know if under the law, and Mueller's probably looking at it, and there will either be a finding or not, but in theory, it could be a kind of witness tampering, signaling to people who are now, especially the two who are cooperating with the special prosecutor, that if in their role as witnesses, they don't say everything they might say, Trump will get them off.
That's absolutely correct. You've got the witness tampering aspect, which could fall within the rubric of obstruction of justice, though also a separate violation of law. And then you have the overarching notion of this is all an abuse of power. And this speaks to the issue of, yes, you may have the right to pardon pursuant to the Constitution, but you can't abuse that power and do so inconsistent with your constitutional oath as president to faithfully execute the laws. And so this is all very complicated in terms of, you know, Trump's undermining of the rule of law and what the legal implications are of that. But we're determined, I think, as House Democrats, as the broader Democratic Party, on behalf of the American people to stand up for our democracy and the notion that no one person is above the law. And by abusing the presidential pardon system, Donald Trump could ultimately create a scenario where, as Giuliani indicated, he could shoot James Comey on the street corner and basically pardon himself. There'd be no consequences. Or if there were conspirators involved in something like that, signal that even if you go down in the even-handed administration of justice through a trial or a plea bargain, ultimately I'm going to exonerate you anyway, yeah, as I've done with folks like Joe Arpaio.
Right. Well, at least Giuliani said that if Trump did shoot Jim Comey, and Giuliani did actually raise that hypothetical, he couldn't be indicted because a sitting president presumably can't be charged with a crime, but Giuliani did say he'd be impeached right away, and then he'd be vulnerable to prosecution. But what do you make of the charges now actually filed by Mueller against Paul Manafort for witness tampering, I guess trying to get witnesses to lie in order to clear him, allegedly? Have you read the claim of how Manafort is allegedly trying to do that?
Yes, I've been briefed about the claim. And I think what we have here, again, and Trey Gowdy, the Republican congressman from South Carolina, who's retiring but is a member of both the House Judiciary Committee and Intelligence Committee, has made the point that if you're innocent, act like it. And nobody around the president right now is behaving as if they were innocent and had nothing to do. And the reality of the witness tampering dynamic, again, designed to manipulate the judicial process to bring about an outcome that would seemingly be inconsistent with the charges that are very serious, including conspiracy against the United States of America, that have been leveled against Paul Manafort. It also is suggestive, Brian, of the fact that why would someone who knows he's being monitored, who's under strict rules of confinement, who's got the spotlight on him, be engaging in such brazen activity, such as the witness tampering that has been alleged, if he wasn't confident that at the end of the day, Donald Trump would pardon him for anything that he's convicted of doing? I mean, for a lot of folks, that is the only reasonable explanation for the type of brazen activity that we've seen in terms of what Manafort has been accused of doing.
My guest is Congressman Hakeem Jeffries, Democrat from Brooklyn and Queens and a member of the House Judiciary Committee. And we can take calls for him on what we've been talking about so far or other things pertaining to Congress. We'll get into some of those as we go. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. How significant is it, in your opinion, that Speaker Paul Ryan is now, for the first time, contradicting the president and Giuliani on these kinds of matters? Ryan saying the investigation was legitimate from the start, not some kind of political spygate or whatever word Trump wants to make up.
Well, I do believe that the speaker does genuinely hold the opinion that this is not a hoax, it's not a witch hunt, it's a legitimate investigation. Any reasonable person understanding this notion would draw that conclusion. In fact, all of the individuals who have led this investigation from the very beginning are Republicans. Bob Mueller is a Republican. Rod Rosenstein is a Republican. James Comey, the former FBI director who initiated this investigation, is a Republican. Christopher Wray, the current FBI director overseeing the investigation, is a Republican. So this whole notion of this being a Democratic-led witch hunt is itself fake news, and that's often what the president and his team, they deflect by trying to convince you that the earth is the sun, left is right, and black is white. It's ridiculous. Now, as it relates to how we proceed forward, all we've been saying as Democrats at the end of the day is, who are you more likely to believe, Donald Trump or Bob Mueller? And the American people are going to have to make a judgment call. And Donald Trump will throw things out there like Spygate and this, that, and the other. And Paul Ryan and Trey Gowdy and others have said this is not accurate. But at the end of the day, it's going to come down to Trump and Bob Mueller. I appreciate the fact that Paul Ryan has some courage on his way out the door in his final months as Speaker and has begun to contradict the regular lies that Donald Trump and his team tell us. But the bottom line, Brian, at the end of the day, is that special prosecutor Bob Mueller will come up with a report. Hopefully that gets presented to the American people, and then the American people can make a decision as to who they believe.
I also want to draw attention, Congressman, to the many ordinary people, not Dinesh D'Souza or Martha Stewart or someone being championed by Kim Kardashian, no matter how worthy, who are applying for pardons for draconian nonviolent drug offense sentences or have turned their lives around or for whatever reason is the basis of their plea for a pardon. That's who pardons are usually for, not celebrities with whom the president is trying to make a political point or influence an investigation into him. And there's this whole process that usually goes kind of up the chain in the Justice Department. Can you describe, as a House Judiciary Committee member for our listeners who may not be familiar with this at all, how that usually works in regular cases?
Absolutely. So usually, both within the Department of Justice, there's a pardon office and specialized attorneys who evaluate pardon applications and commutation applications on a case-by-case basis as it relates to both the initial trial, the conviction, the sentence, whether there's been evidence that has subsequently emerged to demonstrate that there may have been a miscarriage of justice, whether there are other factors that have developed over time, whether the sentencing judge and the prosecutors who were involved in the case have subsequently had a change of heart, which does occur from time to time, and have expressed support for a pardon or a commutation. It's a very extensive process. And then within the White House, once the pardons attorneys and their office in the DOJ has reported out recommendations, you usually have the White House counsel or others under 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue's umbrella make a recommendation to the president. Here, you've got a situation where either the conservative entertainment complex or celebrities like Kim Kardashian have a direct line to the president. The overwhelming majority of folks, Brian, as you indicated, who've been swept up into the mass incarceration epidemic, experiencing unjust sentences, will never have the opportunity to have their cases evaluated if this is the manner in which the president is going to proceed.
What the president did do is to commute the sentence so she could be freed immediately of Alice Marie Johnson, a 62-year-old woman who was serving a life sentence, I believe since 1996, for a nonviolent drug offense. Kim Kardashian, or Kim Kardashian West, visited the White House last week to speak with Trump about Johnson's case. Congressman, even if this pardon came about for corrupt purposes, is there justice or a larger lesson in it?
There's absolutely justice in it, and I'm pleased that it was done. I'm thankful for Kim Kardashian West's intervention in this manner, and we would welcome the support of a whole host of people in the broader effort around criminal justice reform, which is something, Brian, as you know, we've been endeavoring to do in the House of Representatives and the Senate. We just, in fact, passed a strongly bipartisan bill called the First Step Act 2 weeks ago in the House of Representatives that would dramatically improve the conditions of currently incarcerated individuals, allow for thousands of people to be released early because of changes that we've made to good time credit and compassionate release, prevent pregnant women from being shackled during their pregnancy and during childbirth and for a few months afterward, require incarcerated individuals within the federal system to live closer to home so that their families can see them during their period of incarceration, and perhaps most importantly, spend hundreds of millions of dollars in reentry education, vocational training, substance abuse programs as part of making sure that people can transform their lives and have a second chance. Hopefully, the president will push the Senate to consider this legislation that we can help thousands of people who are in similarly situated circumstances have a second chance at life, and more importantly, perhaps, that he will instruct Jeff Sessions to stop his opposition to sentencing reform, which would allow us to roll back some of the draconian laws that put folks like Alice Marie Johnson into the federal system for life without the possibility of parole in the first place.
By the way, I read about your bipartisan relationship, which is surprising some people, with Republican Congressman Doug Collins from a very conservative district in Georgia on this criminal justice reform bill. Can you tell us about where you found ground with Doug Collins and whether that offers further hope for bipartisanship on criminal justice reform against mass incarceration going forward?
Yeah, no, it's a great question, Brian. And when I came to Congress initially 5.5 years ago, I was quite surprised that there appeared to be an appetite amongst my colleagues on the other side of the aisle, Republicans, conservatives, people on the right, to deal with criminal justice reform, in part for three reasons. You had the fiscal conservatives come to a conclusion that $80 billion that we spend per year on mass incarceration in America was the equivalent of a failed government program and a waste of taxpayer resources, particularly when at least half of the individuals who are incarcerated are nonviolent drug offenders who pose no real threat to society. So you had the fiscal conservatives on board with exploring criminal justice reform, and then you had sort of the religious right theologically aligned with the notion that people who have made mistakes should be given a second chance in life once they've paid their debt to society, and that we should be helping those individuals get that second chance and transform themselves. In part, you know, Doug Collins is a former Baptist preacher from the South who is closely aligned with that faction of the Republican Party and believes, I think, truly in the notion of compassion for those who may have made mistakes but really deserve the opportunity and the hope of a new start in life. And then you actually have the libertarians, Brian, and that would be folks like Rand Paul, who have genuinely concluded that over-criminalization in America, which is a significant problem, is an example of what they view as government overreach. And we've managed to convince them that if you don't like government overreach, the area where it can be most damaging to the citizenry is if the government can take away your life or your liberty unjustly.
And I know on the Senate side, Rand Paul has been working with Cory Booker on some bipartisan legislation along these lines. Do you think, though, before we move on to some other things, that Trump and Sessions are now standing in the way of reforms to fight mass incarceration that you could get bipartisanship in Congress for, even with the current Republican majorities?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think Sessions is clearly an obstacle. But within the White House, Jared Kushner has emerged as someone who appears to be authentically committed to some form of criminal justice reform, starting on the prison reform side, which is helping those individuals currently incarcerated. The vehicle for that now is the First Step Act that Collins and I have worked on and has successfully passed the House in the last few weeks. And then there's the sentencing reform, which Sessions has indicated he's dead set against. And the White House has apparently adopted a strategy where they're going to allow Jared Kushner to sort of occupy the prison reform lane and allow the Congress to try to negotiate the strongest possible bill in that area. But at least as of the current thinking, they would continue to allow Jeff Sessions as the Attorney General to occupy the sentencing reform lane and resist the bipartisan congressional effort to roll back mandatory minimums, give judges more discretion, make changes in the law such as the crack cocaine, powder cocaine, which was 100-1 and now is 18-1 retroactive so that people who are currently incarcerated will be released. There's Republican support for that. Jeff Sessions has stood in the way. And so that is the challenge, that it's, as with many issues, it's a schizophrenic White House, and who knows ultimately where Trump will land.
That's all really interesting, and that whole business about the Jared Kushner lane and that he has the president's blessing to liberalize in certain directions and the Sessions lane, and he has the permission to crack down in other directions. That's all news to me, so that's really, really interesting for a lot of our listeners, I think, on how that's going. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, and Steve in Manhattan, you're on WNYC with Congressman Hakeem Jeffries from Brooklyn and Queens. Hi, Steve.
Good morning, Brian. I'm really glad that you looked up the definition of frame this morning, because I have a similar question about the word pardon. Now, my understanding, the pardon is something that someone can do to someone else or someone can do to you. It's like forgiving for an offense. But, I mean, I don't understand how one can pardon himself unless the word had a different meaning to the framers than it does
right
in everyday language. So I'm wondering if the actual definition of pardon comes into play here, or if it's really just a, you know, more of a constitutional issue of a power that the president has.
Yeah, and this may be splitting hairs semantically. You know, we can forgive ourselves for things too. But I think we should all stop talking about this, because I think it's a distraction by Trump to get people talking about whether he's pardoning himself when he's really doing all these other things to more subtly potentially obstruct justice in the Manafort investigation, in the Mueller investigation, like we were talking about before, But I don't know. Congressman, what do you think as a member of the Judiciary Committee? Should we even spend time talking about this idea that even Giuliani seems to dismiss of Trump pardoning himself?
Well, I think the president probably believes that he's got the capacity to pardon himself. And so for that reason alone, I think making sure that the American people understand that would be wholly inconsistent with the vision of the framers of the founding fathers of the notion that no person is above the law in and of itself is important. But the broader point that you've made, Brian, is exactly correct, that the bigger challenge is that this is likely all part of some harebrained scheme cooked up in the Oval Office to send a message to the president's folks who have been swept up in the Russian collusion investigation that at the end of the day, he'll have their back. So there's no need for them to cooperate with the Mueller investigation.
Do you at least think that your Republican colleagues, current majority on the House Judiciary Committee, would bring articles of impeachment if Trump did in fact pardon himself?
You know, that's an open question, and unfortunately I can't say with any degree of confidence that the Republican majority would necessarily proceed to the impeachment remedy, which would really be the only remedy that the founding fathers have given us for such a situation. Now, do I think that there are members of the Senate who, many of whom have already been on record suggesting that that would be a red line that cannot be crossed, and would suggest that if we were able to move sort of an impeachment proceeding under the scenario that you described, that removal could be possible in the Senate? I think that is a far more likely scenario. But
have some of your colleagues on the committee actually said, you know, I'm not sure, Hakeem, if I would bring an article of impeachment against Trump if he pardoned him and pardoned himself because he claimed that the investigation was unjust?
They haven't gone that far, but what they have done is essentially parrot the talking points of the president that this whole thing is a hoax and is a witch hunt and that there was no collusion when they know that, in fact, is not the case. And so if they've already gone down this road of being able to put party over country and essentially give up their ability to function as a separate co-equal branch of government and take orders from Donald Trump in this area, who's to say that if he would have pardoned himself, they wouldn't come up with some excuse as to why that's not necessarily a problem? And he had to do it because this is all a witch hunt. See, they're setting up in some ways the notion that he may have to take the extreme measure of pardoning himself or pardoning others because this was all unjust. One is not disconnected from the other, and that's quite unfortunate.
James in Tarrytown, you're on WNYC with Congressman Jeffries. Hi, James.
Good morning, Congressman. Thank you for the conversation and taking the call. I'm hoping you can speak to this question, which has two elements to it. The first one is, it's my understanding that the standard of collusion is a very, very high bar to prove, but assuming that that bar is overcome, it goes into the House impeaches and the Senate convicts. What is the likelihood, from your perspective, assuming that Mueller can prove collusion, that the House in its current configuration would even take up articles of impeachment?
And thank you for the question. I think the House in its current configuration, notwithstanding the presence of a smoking gun around the collusion conspiracy to sell out our democracy question, would be very unlikely to move aggressively with the constitutional remedy that we've been given for an out-of-control president. Now, that can change depending on what happens in November, but I've got no reason to believe, as John Boehner has indicated, that the Republican Party will function as a Republican Party to defend the values of this country, as opposed to the Trump Party, which is a party simply defending the president at all costs.
Go ahead. Did you want to finish the thought?
No, I think that.
And my guest is Congressman Hakeem Jeffries, Democrat from parts of Brooklyn and Queens, member of the House Judiciary Committee. In our remaining time, Congressman, I want to touch on two other issues. One is, what's this new push by House Republicans on DACA and other immigration measures, and do you see the possibility of a positive resolution of the DACA question now?
Well, my colleagues in the House on the Republican side are in conference right now as we speak, Brian, talking through the DACA issue and trying to come up with what they are calling a consensus bill that can arrive at 218, which is a number to pass any legislation on the House floor on this issue that provides some semblance of a pathway for current Dreamers to receive, in their view, either legalization or maybe even ultimately citizenship, but cracks down in a very harsh way on immigration along the border in terms of interior enforcement and in ways that will not be acceptable, I believe, to moderate Republicans and certainly the House Democratic Caucus. The reason why they are having this conversation now and being forced to potentially confront this issue is that there is presently a discharge petition which would force the immigration issue onto the floor of the House of Representatives in a process called Queen of the Hill, where there would be up to four different bills that we would consider will be debated and voted on. And the bill that received the greatest number of votes would be the one that leaves the House of Representatives and goes to the Senate. And most people understand that the likely bill under that scenario would be one overwhelmingly supported by Democrats and anywhere between 25 to 50 Republicans at minimum, some of whom are in very tough districts, in districts that Hillary Clinton won, that would provide a clear pathway to current Dreamers, and that would not have some of the harsh punitive measures along the border that right-wing Republicans are supporting. And because, Brian, that discharge petition, if it's signed, I believe, by two additional Republicans, would become live on the floor of the House of Representatives.
You're that close.
They're very concerned.
And I want to, so we'll see how that turns out, maybe even later today. And the last thing is, I want to get your reaction to the reports, I think this originated in Politico, that the Trump administration might try to reorganize the federal government. That's Politico's term, reorganize the federal government. And as sweeping as that sounds, they're focusing on the possibility of taking food stamps out of the Agriculture Department to put them in Health and Human Services, and then rename Health and Human Services to include the word welfare. And I know there's a great history here that involves a predecessor of yours in your congressional district seat, the legendary Shirley Chisholm, the first African-American woman elected to Congress. Can you maybe tell that story? Do you know that story as you understand it, that Shirley Chisholm had something to do with getting the food stamp program put in the Agriculture Department in the first place?
Oh, that's correct. It's a great story. And when Shirley Chisholm was first elected as the first African-American woman ever sent to the United States Congress, there were a lot of folks, good old boys from the South, who weren't happy with that development and apparently prevailed upon the then speaker to assign Shirley Chisholm to the Agricultural Committee. Now, she had gone to Congress representing many of the same neighborhoods that I currently represent in Central Brooklyn, including Bedford-Stuyvesant, Crown Heights, and other areas that are highly urban and have significant communities that were impoverished of color, wanting to help those individuals. And the view was by putting her on the Agricultural Committee, she'd have no capacity to do that. But it just so happens that she partnered up with Senator Bob Dole, who at the time, of course, representing the state of Kansas, was looking for ways to help farmers who had excess surpluses of food, but no vehicle to provide that food, and therefore were beginning to lose profit and viability. And that basically began a marriage between Shirley Chisholm and Bob Dole, pushing for, you know, the what was then called the food stamp program that would allow individuals in America to purchase at discounted rates subsidized food from the farmers throughout the country. And various iterations have proceeded since that moment, but the fundamental partnership has remained the same between farmers in rural America and people in urban America and in other parts of the country as it relates to providing supplemental nutritional assistance to people in this country. And right now there are about 40 million food insecure folks. And the cynical view, and I happen to share this view, is that the reason why Mick Mulvaney and Trump and those folks are trying to rip away this program out of the Department of Agriculture and place it within Health and Human Services and then rename it is to demonize this program and break the traditional coalition that has existed between rural America and the farming community and urban America and the Supplemental Nutritional Assistance Program that is currently very viable. And that would be an awful thing to do.
So we will see if they officially propose that, and if so, what kind of debate breaks out and what kind of new coalitions might be formed, modern coalitions like Shirley Chisholm had with Bob Dole, between urban representatives in Congress and rural representatives in Congress, yet another potential battle looming in 2018. Congressman Hakeem Jeffries, Democrat from Brooklyn and Queens, thank you so much for joining us today.
Great to be with you as always. Talk to you soon.